Hello, welcome to Growing Wild here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. I'm Charlotte Petz, and coming up on today's show we have a project called Grow, which is centred around nature connection and the benefits to health. We have the Lemon Tree Trust, an organisation aiding the development of green spaces in refugee camps, and the Dementia Inclusive Gardening Group running at the community allotment at Plot 22. But first, let's have a song, and it's going to be Wind by Cat Stevens.
I listen to the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows.
It's short, but it's so sweet. That's Cat Stevens and The Wind. Okay, so the overarching theme of this month's show is well-being and how being outside and getting outside and having green spaces around us, it just generally improves our well-being in a number of different ways. And from my own experience of that lifestyle, I know how beneficial it can be. So I've honed in on just three projects, and the first of those is Grow. So Grow is a project that was founded by Joe Wren, and its aim is to get people with experiences of depression, anxiety, stress and other mental health issues out into the countryside in a range of ways over an 8-week period. I went to visit them over at Saddlescombe Farm, which is a National Trust property just off the South Downs. It's glorious, it's beautiful, it's in a valley, it's very green, you're surrounded by hills. So here are a few voices from the project, and the first of which is Joe telling us more about the charity.
We're a small local charity that basically works on a really simple principle of using the amazing kind of therapeutic power of nature to improve well-being. We work generally with people with mental health issues, but we also believe that, you know, nature is for everyone, and nature, there isn't anyone, I don't think, that can't benefit from being out in nature. Nature is incredibly healing, and that it can be part of a step towards recovery. And quite often it's just that people are disconnected from that or forgotten it. You know, as children, you quite often hear people talking about their experiences as a child of being out in nature and remembering that it's something that they love doing, that's really healthy. But I think quite often people get disconnected by that, A, by living in the city, and B, you know, when they're struggling with mental health issues, sometimes, you know, confidence makes it difficult to come out into nature. Money sometimes is not an issue. So there are all kinds of reasons why people may not do it. And what Grow tries to do is to reconnect people with the amazing countryside that we've got surrounding Brighton. And to kind of put it in their armoury of tools that they can use. That it's always there, it's always free, it's completely free of side effects, apart from really positive ones. You know, it's a really positive way to use as something to improve your well-being.
My name's Graham Welfare. I work for the National Trust and I'm an area ranger. The National Trust at Saddlescombe Farm in Devil's Dyke, we look after about 2,500 acres of land, countryside, chalk grassland, woodland, farm. It's about roughly the size of about 1,000 football pitches that we've got to look after.
So why is the National Trust interested in having groups like this being able to operate out of their sites?
I think there's a big push now from the National Trust to sort of try and reach communities that generally don't have access to the countryside. And the work that we've done with Grow over the last 7 years has been really sort of taken on board by the Trust now. And we've provided over 300 people sort of access to the farm on these 8-week seasons to do practical exercises, art-based therapies, creative tasks, working with Rowley, who's our tenant farmer here. The amount of appreciation that the people have been on Grow has been remarkable, and that it's been life-changing for a lot of people.
Do you have any of the participants helping you on the farm ongoing, you know, after their...
Yeah, so when Joe first came to me 7 years ago, the Trust vision was basically we could see that this would succeed if people, after 8 weeks, they'd want to come out and volunteer with us. That's worked. We've had quite a few people who are working for the Trust. I mean, at the moment, we've got three people in the garden, ex-Grow participants. And I have a regular guy called Andy who comes out on Fridays with us. So the National Trust are actually setting up a new group, which is called Trust in Nature, specifically for ex-Grow participants.
Oh, brilliant.
So we're just in the middle of starting that. So there'll be a benefit to the National Trust property, but also it will sort of carry on that engagement with the outdoors. Historically, we haven't been so good at the for everyone, but I think we're getting there. Mm. I think we've now realised that there are people out there in cities and towns who can't access the countryside, and we're making it easier for them.
My name's Mary Murphy.
You're a participant.
In Grow, yeah. Yeah.
Is this your first experience of doing this?
Or? Yeah, and I'm made up to be here, actually. This is the 21st time they've done it. So I'm here on the kind of like the coming of age.
What was it that made you want to come here? What had you seen about this that had drawn you to come?
I read about the various things that are involved and that you're allowed to get amongst, you know, while you're on Grow. And I was like, oh, I really like the sound of that, being outside, which I don't spend enough time being outside, and being in nature and doing all these like activities, like today it's art, but doing it in nature, I felt like it would be good for my head and for my heart. My heart is quite often sad due to life circumstances. But then as soon as we got here, I just lifted up in my heart, lifted up and opened out, and I felt more a home in myself and a peace in myself. So yeah, it was for that really, to get myself outside. Like last week was the first one, and then, you know, we came along and we had a little tour around the farm, and literally within 10 minutes I just felt like there's only that step in front of me, and then there's only this step in front of me, and that's all there is, and it's so connected and it's so peaceful.
Did you manage to carry some of that with you through the week?
I did.
Oh, good.
So I noticed more the things that I see every day. So I walk past these little narcissi. I must have walked past them hundreds of times, but I really noticed them. I can hear birdsong in the air vents. You know, the sound of birdsong pushes through the air vents in the flats. And it's right outside my window, and I'm hearing it more. I'm tuning, like I was saying earlier, I'm like a radio. I've tuned in a bit more to it.
After one session, that's just brilliant.
Amazing, amazing, yeah. Profound, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, can you already imagine that you're going to be engaged in this in a way that you weren't previously at the end of the course?
Most definitely.
Yeah. What would you say to people thinking about doing something like this if they're struggling and, you know...
I'd say do it.
Yeah.
I'd say just, you know, just do it once. Just come up and do it. Because it's transformative and it's so powerful in the simplest form, which is the best, nicest kind of transformation is... in the simplest form. It's beautiful, really. It's absolutely joyous.
I'm Jim. Hi.
Will you talk me through your wild art, Jim?
Yeah, we're out here creating some wild art. And, you know, sometimes you kind of see things as you're wandering along that you might like to incorporate it into it. Sometimes you could just kind of... just comes to you, and I quite like that kind of just coming to you. Something happens at that moment, and when I arrived here, I saw this beautiful old iron. It's kind of like a track, but it's a very thin piece of track, and it's all twisted and gnarled and rusted. And I just thought, wow, what a piece! That's just, where's that come from? And it's like a big long slide. And I also found this, I like incorporating. Pieces not only from nature but also stuff that you find, so it might be litter or plastic or stuff that's been thrown and discarded, and I found this plastic bottle. So that's kind of at the top of this beautiful piece of iron rusted slide fountain, and it's trickling water, and down the slide runs into this beautiful white pool of water at the bottom, which is a chalk stone, bright white chalk stone, and weaving all the way up the slide is this ivy and moss and lichen that I've found. And yeah, it's kind of something that I want to jump off.
Head first,
First down.
it's like a boom.
So it just starts. Once you just start with an idea, and then you just start bringing stuff into it, and suddenly you end up. Yeah, I'm quite proud of it actually. Quite like it.
My name is Jennifer. I'm one of the volunteers as part of Grow, so I'm here to help the project.
So you were a participant last year.
Yeah, did the 8-week course or whatever experience, I don't think it's a course. And when I left, I said to Joe, I'd really like to volunteer.
How are you finding the difference between having been a participant to now being a volunteer?
It's lovely because you come back and you realise how a beautiful place it is, but also it's just a real humbling thing to support other people in that experience, because I know for me it was transformational, so to be able to do that, give that to other people is at the beginning, but exciting.
Yeah, just to talk a bit about your experience as a participant, you use the word transformational. What happened for you over the 8 weeks?
I mean, I was quite anxious when I came. I'd say I'm somebody who's quite private, so for me to sit on a bus with other people, I was like, can't I just come on my own, in my own car, and then go in my own car? And she was like, no, that's not... So that whole thing of being part of, just being a part of something, so not running it, not having major responsibility, and just immersing myself in that. And I know that being outside is really... it's vital. It's not a treat. It's absolutely essential. But it also brought me together. I felt quite disjointed when I came, and so somewhere in those 8 weeks I came together as a person. So my sort of physical health, my mental health and me all came together, and there was a sense of like, oh, it's really okay. All these things are okay, whereas before they'd been very compartmentalised. Whereas being in this space, knowing that I could be me, I got some sort of sense of peace of, oh, this is who I am and it's really okay.
That was just a few of the voices that were there that day. It was such a lovely thing to be part of and to see, and the work that Joe does there is just wonderful, and hearing how much of an effect it's had already. They're only on week two, and Mary there just being so evangelical about it. I think it summed it up really well, actually. And the bits of art they made in the quarry, we went for a walk off into this limestone quarry, and everyone was just collecting things and then making these little bits of art. And then some people were just hanging out on the rug and having a chat, and very relaxed, very easy place to be. So the biggest challenge that those sorts of projects face, though, is funding. And it's just really sad that the way our system is set up and the financial struggles that we all know about with the NHS means that, you know, these preventative cares or these more holistic views often don't get given priority. But, you know, sometimes I imagine what it would be like if the NHS could fund projects like that. It'd be so brilliant. But if you do feel like you want to contribute to that project, because it's so hand to mouth for them to keep that running now, you know, funding is so hard and they're always needing and looking for funds to come in. So I will put the link to their website and some information about them on the show page, which is on radioreverb.com. And then you go to shows and find Growing Wild in there. They do some amazing things, and it's well worth your pennies if you felt so obliged. Okay, let's have a song, and then we'll be back with the Lemon Tree Trust. So this is Xavier Rudd and Let Me Be.
Let me be now, let me be harsh. I won't be free now, free to see. Yeah, well, I want to walk away, let me feel my feet. Let me be.
was Xavier Rudd and Let Me Be Free. This is Growing Wild. I'm Charlotte Petz, and you are listening to Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM, online and on digital. Next, we have the Lemon Tree Trust. They are a small organisation providing the means for displaced people living in camps to grow their own areas of garden and their own food, their own flowers, predominantly in Iraq. This year, they're sponsoring a garden at the Chelsea Flower Show designed by Tom Massey. So that's going to provide loads of exposure for them. And I spoke to Juliet Milliken, who's a member of the team, and to find out more about the project. The phone line quality isn't brilliant, so I apologise for that. We really struggled to get a decent connection. But I started by asking her what the Lemon Tree Trust is.
Lemon Tree Trust is a relatively small organisation based in the UK and in the US. The idea behind it was the brainchild of a woman, Stephanie Hunt, a US philanthropist, and Mikey Tompkins, who did a PhD in urban agriculture at the University of Brighton. Stephanie had for a long time been interested in the role of urban agriculture, food growing, particularly with refugees, and invited Mikey to come to the States to look at how refugees were growing food, producing food in an urban environment. And then at the invitation of somebody in Iraq, went to scope the opportunities for redesigning refugee camps in a different way. We've worked mainly in Iraq as a team, and a little bit in Jordan and a little bit in Uganda, and we're at the moment scoping out the possibility of working in Greece. But most of our work is in Iraq. So I guess as a small organisation, we focus on developing gardens in refugee camps, supporting refugees in food growing, looking at what their needs are around green space and food growing, looking at the opportunities for using the water that is transported into refugee camps for water and sanitation reasons into growing, so it doesn't just create mud and become a health hazard, but diverting that into irrigation, and looking at what's possible and what a refugee camp of the future might look like. We know now that refugee camps are not short-term issues, that people stay in them for a long time, that they're in existence for a long time, they're not temporary structures, and therefore we feel the planning of them needs to take into account the quality of life of people in them for the longer term, medium to long term, rather than just the saving of life for them in the short term.
In building the gardens, are you looking to promote community there or to develop skills so that people have skills that they can take with them, or what are the focuses behind building the gardens?
Many and all of those things.
Yeah.
We started by distributing lemon trees. I guess it started by a visit to the camp and looked at gardens that were already emerging. And in many refugee camps around the world where people are there for more than a few weeks, people will begin to plant. And we do know that refugees who leave their homes, even who leave under pressure and very quickly, very often take seeds with them because seeds carry a great connection to home. So we were aware that people were already beginning to develop their gardens and that the camps they were living in were pretty dry and sparse and unshady environments. So we began by distributing lemon trees, with using some of the gardeners who were there to work with us and distribute lemon trees for us. We don't have any staff resident in country apart from the refugees themselves who we employ to work with us. And then we held a garden competition, really, as a way of finding out what people wanted to grow and to stimulate and encourage growing. And I guess initially our aim was just the greening of the camp, to make it a more pleasant environment for people to be in and to support them in the things that they were doing already with limited resources. And then later we were given a plot of land to use as a demonstration garden to grow food on a larger scale. So we've got greenhouses there. We're developing a cookbook with the women. That's what my colleagues are doing this week.
Oh, wow.
To illustrate some of the things that people are growing and what they're growing them for and the food that they're cooking from them and the contribution that food growing can make to supplement the diet that is given to them through development aid. But also training people in the use of grey water recycling.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that because I imagine it's quite a limited source they've got over there. How do you irrigate everything that's being grown?
Obviously, all the water has to be brought into the camp because there was no mainstream drainage there. But it is an area in which the number of, you know, large numbers of families living there, about 30,000 people at the moment.
30,000 people are there. Gosh.
Living in that camp. Yeah, wow. Everybody wow. with an allocation of around 30 litres of water a day. Some of that water goes into drinking, of course, but a lot of it goes into washing and the preparation of vegetables, and therefore something needs to happen to it afterwards. So a drainage system has retrospectively been put in, but as often happens in refugee camps, there are areas where there's water runoff, where the grey water is lying on the land because it's not being used. So getting people to recycle that themselves as far as possible to irrigate their own gardens, and then looking at putting in a mechanism by which that can be used to irrigate land for growing rather than just putting it out the way underground, as it were.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably something we can all learn from, really, is being more efficient at our water use. I found it really interesting you were saying that people just started growing their own little spaces anyway. I think that's amazing. I think that shows the power of needing to do that, that sort of human right and need to have green around you and to create that space around you. I think it's so vital for our well-being. Is it well-being that you're trying to increase and improve in those camps by building the gardens?
I did some interviews in January and in May and looked at why all the garden owners were growing, what they were getting out of them, and also what they were growing. And as many people were growing flowers as food. And when you asked people why they wanted to grow, they talked about the importance of greenery for fresh air, greenery for a sense of home, creating a place to sit, a place to be with the family, creating a sense of normality, having an occupation. So all of those things are, yes, as important as producing food.
Yeah.
People in the camp in Iraq are not short of food. Food is available. People are provided with food, but much of that food is dried. And there's also, I think, something really important about having agency and having control over the production of your own food, even if it's only herbs that make the food that you're cooking taste more like it did at home.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
So all of those things contribute to psychosocial well-being, probably over and above contribution to actual nutrition.
What sort of things are being grown over there? You said lemon trees initially. What else is going on?
People are growing lots of flowers, roses. Syrians love roses. Okay. And we're currently in discussions with Lush about the possibility of a rose cooperative on a larger basis for the production of rose oil. So we're doing a feasibility study on that at the moment as to whether the water that we can recycle will be good enough to create roses for rose oil. But everybody wants to grow roses anyway, so even if it didn't create rose oil, people would enjoy it. People are growing lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers, okra, ladies' fingers.
Yeah. What size is the garden?
People's home gardens are relatively small. Some people have got a joint garden with their neighbours, so they've got a strip that runs outside the front of two or three houses. Some people only have containers just outside their houses or between two houses. People's houses have been built on the plot that they were given to accommodate them in a tent when they first arrived. So when people arrived in camp, everybody lived in tents. But gradually, the longer that they've been there, they've started to construct breeze-blocked houses to replace the tents. And now some of them are beginning to stone-clad their houses because they don't feel that they can return to Syria anytime soon. So people are anticipating being there for the long term, if not indefinitely.
And have you found the sorts of people who are getting involved in the bigger space, in the more community space, are they people who have had sort of skills and experience in growing before, or has it attracted people to learn and to train into growing their produce for maybe the first time?
I would say predominantly the former.
Yeah.
Many men in Syria were farmers and owned land. Even those that were living in the city in Damascus would have had family land out in the villages. So most of the men have experience of farming before. And many of the women have experience of growing, even if only in window boxes. We had 150 entrants to the garden competition last year, and I think there were only five or six of them who'd never gardened at all before. Some hadn't had much, just had window boxes, and were using this as an opportunity to grow more. And people are obviously growing under different conditions, hence the importance of the demonstration garden.
Mm-hmm.
But being among greenery, growing things, plants, flowers, are a way of life for most Syrians and most Kurds.
And the Chelsea Garden, Lemon Tree Trust, is sponsoring a garden at Chelsea this year. That's a lot of exposure. Is that what you're hoping for, to raise awareness of the project?
Yeah, we're working with a talented young garden designer who is in Iraq at this very moment, returning home today, who's designing a garden for us inspired by the refugee camp gardens in Chelsea. So he's not really trying to replicate them. He's trying to take their ideas and build them into a bigger garden to help people to think about the need for growing in green spaces, and that is a communal need, whatever your background and whatever your situation. It's got a small water feature in it, and interestingly, many of the gardens, we had to put in a category in our garden competition in Iraq for water features, because many people, despite, you know, living in refugee camps, having very little access to money, being under stress, wanted to create a garden that had some kind of fountain in it and some kind of water in it, because that has particular significance for Islamic, for Kurdish culture. So there were many water features there, and there will be one in our garden in Chelsea. We're trying to use plants that come from the region, come from the Middle East, a lot of lemon trees, obviously, a lot of tarragon, because that's quite an important plant. But Tom's there at the moment working with a botanist who lives in Domez, who is also a refugee himself, to look at what grows wild in that area and what are the important plants from that area and that region that need to be preserved.
When does the cookbook come out that you mentioned, you know?
Well, it'd be nice to get it out in time for Chelsea. I think the week's gone very well. My colleague Carrie, who's working on that, is on the plane as we speak. So hopefully I'll catch up with her next week and find out how advanced it is and how far they've been able to get with it, and if we can get it produced in time for the end of May.
Well, good luck at Chelsea. I hope it goes well. And it's such a great project. I agree with myself there, that last sentiment. It is a great project. I'll put the link to their website on the Growing Wild show page, which you can find on radioreverb.com. My favourite part of that is how even when people are fleeing from a war zone, they take seeds with them because they know that that will remind them of home and it's a piece of home. They'd started to grow these things before anyone like the Lemon Tree Trust had gotten involved anyway, and there's something quite profound about that, and it's just that thread that's running through this whole show is the importance of nature and greenery in all of our lives, no matter what our current situation happens to be. Okay, let's have a song, and then we're going to hear from the Dementia Inclusive Gardening Group at Plot 22. But this is Bembem Maria by the Gypsy Kings. It's Bembem Maria by the Gypsy Kings. I am obsessed with the Gypsy Kings at the moment. I don't know what happened to me, but they've invaded my life, but I quite like it. Okay, next up, we've got the Dementia Inclusive Gardening Group. I went over to Plot 22, who featured on this show previously when I spoke to Emma Haldsworth, who was the founder. It's a community allotment, and they run several different courses on there through the week. I met with Charlotte Overton-Hart, who facilitates the monthly group, and she just talked to me a little bit about dementia as a whole. It's a disease that she works with a lot. And I hadn't realised that there are actually over 200 different types of dementia. And it's just the word is used as an umbrella term to describe a set of symptoms caused by diseases in the brain. As a disease, it hasn't really found a home in services because it seems to fall between physical and mental illness. It's not quite decided whether it's a mental illness or not. The biggest risk factor to getting it is age, but actually around 42,000 people under 65 are currently living with dementia in this country. And it's only actually been recognised as a disability since 2016, which is incredibly recent because it's an invisible disability. So the ways that we are learning how to deal with it and learning how to cope with it are still relatively young, as it were. So this is one way to help with both the carers and the people living with dementia to come together and to meet up and spend some time on that lovely plot out there in Hove. You'll hear a few voices from the group, and we start off in the shed. It's a lovely shed. I could happily live in that shed, actually. It's got a wood burner. You sit round in a circle. It's very cosy. It's very comfortable. It's a bit of a TARDIS. It seems that however many people are there, you all fit in. So we're all in there, and the first voice you'll hear is Charlotte just welcoming the group, and we all check in and just hear how everybody's feeling.
Friends, welcome. Welcome to Plot 22. We're so glad you could join us today. And I'm sure we've all been looking at the sky, hoping the sunshine.
No more snow, that's all right.
No more snow. I wonder if, to begin, we could have a think about how we're feeling today. So, the sun's out, some daffodils are out, there's some blue sky. Joy, how do you feel today?
All the better for seeing you.
Thank you.
All of you. And the baby. Sitting there like a little love.
My name's Charlotte. I support people who are living with dementia and their carers to help them have meaningful moments and moments of connection.
What makes a space dementia friendly?
We always start with the person, their strengths, things that they love to do, and then alongside that we consider what people might find tricky. So, for example, if someone's mobility is not quite so good, which may or may not be dementia related, or if because of the type of a person's dementia they have problems with their perception or sequencing, we then think how that might present a challenge in the space. So many people who are living with dementia wouldn't find a garden space challenging at all, and if anything, it's more relaxing and restful than being indoors, just listening to the birds and seeing the trees and noticing the seasons. So much of these things are beyond language, so they don't present the challenges that an indoor environment might.
What sort of things do you do at this group?
We're really led by the seasons, so we will always do something that is in keeping with the season. The value really is in being with one another and enjoying unhurried quality time, and that really is the starting point and the basis from everything. So rather than saying, here's something that we have to achieve today, which might create some kind of pressure, people might feel overwhelmed thinking, gosh, we've got to plant the carrots or we've got to, prune this tree. Rather, we tune into how someone is that day. Again, we tap into their strengths, things that they love doing, not things they find tricky. So we might plant something, we might harvest something. Really, we do our best to enjoy sensory activities, which is not tricky in a beautiful outdoor space. We harvest a lot of herbs and maybe tie them just with a ribbon, a very simple activity.
Do you find that participants tend to be people that have been keen gardeners previously? You know, is there a retained knowledge in there that, or do you get people who've never really had much to do with gardening come along as well?
Yeah, typically the participants who come along are keen gardeners or have been in the past.
Okay.
That's absolutely not a requirement on our side, but certainly I have been learning from the participants names of plants and flowers. My own background is not in gardening, and I couldn't pretend it was, because I just don't know the things that our participants know. I remember pottering along with one of our participants and she said to me, "Oh, what's that called?" pointing at a very pretty blue flower, and I said, "Oh, I don't know, I wonder what it is called." And it came back to her and she said, "I know, it's love in the mist." And I've remembered that. It's a real treat to spend time with people who have sometimes still very strong memories for the gardening they've done throughout their lives.
Are we planting these or just going for beetroot?
Through the beetroot for now, shall we?
Yeah, so we don't get into it.
Isn't it early for beetroot?
Yes.
I was just looking. It's 1 month early, I think. Should be done.
What are we doing?
Right, let's go with beetroot, friends. OK, are these ones OK?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Okay, great.
They'll get planted out when they start.
Step two.
So, bring it back again.
Joy, would you like to have a go?
Who, me?
Yeah. Well, my name's Ray Buckley, and my sister has Alzheimer's, and I'm a full-time carer for her. It does them a lot of good. It gets them out. And Joy doesn't do a lot of walking, which means her legs aren't going so well now either. So it's very difficult. But the group helps, and I'm doing all right at the moment, and I manage to support her.
How long has she been living with Alzheimer's?
4 years.
Okay.
Maybe a bit more. That was diagnosis, so maybe a bit more. It's gradually getting worse.
Yeah.
Now she'll forget where the light switch is, or forget how to turn the television on, So I have to do all that tidying. I do all the cooking, all the washing. So, yeah, I'm having to cope with more and more and more. But we're doing it and trying to get up here as well.
Does it feel like a bit of respite for you as well, being here?
Yeah, because I'm not full bore doing something else.
Does Joy remember coming here? Does she take some of it with her after you leave?
No, if I mention it tomorrow, she won't remember it. She might remember it when halfway through the week, all of a sudden, something had come back to her. But otherwise, no.
So it's just about being quite present then? It's just
everything is in the present, yeah. You live for the moment, absolutely.
Oh, it's quite warm, isn't it? I wonder what this is. Give this a feel. Have a smell. As you rub your fingers on it.
Do you know what it is?
Well, I think it might be chives. Do you think it's chives?
I'm here with my dad. He got diagnosed just over a year ago, and they thought he had Alzheimer's at first, but they recently changed his diagnosis to Lewy body dementia.
Okay, what does that mean?
As far as I understand, it's a dementia often comes with Parkinson's, and dad gets his perspective is a bit warped, so it warps his perspective and can come with anxiety, depression, and what's the other one? Hallucinations.
How do you find bringing him to things like this?
It really helps. He loves, because he can get quite lonely, even though we'll see him regularly, to have a new experience initially will cause anxiety, but actually is more positive in the long run once we've got through the actually arriving and meeting people.
Has he had experience of gardening before? Is that why you brought him here?
He has gardened his whole life. He and my mum had a great garden which they transformed. He worked really hard at it. Just saying about your garden, Dad.
Hello,
Hatchmere.
I hear you've been a keen gardener.
So we had 5 acres of ground.
Five acres?
It was fun at first. My son used to help on that. And how long have we lived there? 7 years. Last year I started feeling it was a chore, but after then I'd liked it as something to do. And I had a deal with my son. He cut the lawns. He got 50p a lawn.
50p a lawn. That sounds a little bit low.
Cut that bit from the end. I have to go back to where I could.
Okay. Back to your beetroot.
Cheers.
Thanks for coming over.
Thank
you. It's a very sensitive question, but how is it for you living, you know, your dad having dementia? And
It's quite emotional.
Yeah.
So I think the uncertainty is emotional. On a day-to-day basis, he seems to manage to function quite well. He's done amazingly well, actually, transitioning to living on his own. But then he'll all of a sudden sort of decline a bit and not cope so well, get depressed or anxious. And I think it's just really emotional thinking what's going to happen in the future, because we don't really know how quickly it will happen, or will it be years or decades. I didn't think that Dad would be up for trying these new things, but he really thrives. He really thrives when he's at some of these sessions.
Do you think there's anything about gardening particularly that is helpful?
I think it's a sensory thing, isn't it? It makes you feel alive and that you're seeing things growing, and makes you feel just happy and fulfilled, I think.
I wonder if we might have a think about something that we enjoyed about our time together this morning. So,
I'm here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's Joy's hearing aid. She's only got one. She's lost all the others.
I haven't got any.
Oh, she's
in. Oh, heck!
Yeah, so it is very, very bad for her.
Something that I have enjoyed this morning is spending time with all of you and being outdoors in the sunshine. How about you, Joy? Something you have enjoyed about this morning?
Oh, all the people that are... The buzz of people.
The interaction,
talking to each other and laughing and watching this little... Watching you. Yes, you can lovely smile.
Yeah, how about you, Andrew? Something you've enjoyed from the morning?
Well, I've enjoyed meeting you all and getting one big love of all the new friends I have.
Yeah, what a tremendous morning in the sunshine.
Yeah, it made a big difference.
So wonderful.
I think one of my favourite things from being at that group was seeing Joy, who was there, who's the lady living with Alzheimer's, and baby William. So Claire, who was there with her dad, had her little baby. He was 7 months old and mainly noshing on breadsticks. And he discovered hot cross buns. He had his first ever hot cross bun that day. And Joy and the baby, just really, all she wanted to do was be near the baby. And seeing her light up and just connect with this little boy was just absolutely lovely. It just makes me think about how the generations are meant to spend time together. Yeah, so sharing that space with them and seeing people make new friends, as Andrew said, and the ease at which everybody's there and how supportive it is, and just a nice place to be for a few hours once a month. Providing those spaces just feels so important. And again, I know I'm super biased and I'm kind of pummeling this thread that to get out into nature helps and benefits all of us. But it's just true. There's studies that have been done. There's more and more conclusive proof that we need to be in nature and connecting with that in whichever way, whether it's walking, whether it's gardening, it's just being outside. And for some of us who live in cities, I think we can forget the importance of that. I'm going to put a few links up on the show page, which is radioreverb.com, and I'm going to put a few links to some studies that have been done, just so if you are interested, you can see what the results of those have been. And also to that dementia group, again, a funding situation arises again, and these guys, they need as much help as they can get. So if you like the sound of that, you can offer time or you can offer money. Or if you know someone that's living with dementia, then please do get in touch with them and they'd very happily have you along on this course. Okay, let's have a song. And it's going to be Here Comes the Sun by The Beatles. Might make the bold claim that that's probably my favourite Beatles song. So full of hope, isn't it? Okay, we're coming to the end of the show. Thank you very much for listening. I want to thank everybody that's been on the show this month. This month has been an absolute joy to put this together, and it really heartens me that there's people out there like these folk who I've had on that are doing these things for other people. Maybe if you're finding yourself in a situation where you're struggling and you've heard this and you want to connect to some of the things you've heard, then please do get in touch. They are there for you. Or if you want to contribute in another way, then please do go to the links. They will be on radioreverb.com in the Growing Wild show page. You can contact me via Instagram and Twitter at growingwildfm or by email, which is growingwildreverb@gmail.com. I'm going to play you out with the Be Good Tanyas and it's The Littlest Birds. I'll be back next month. Until then, go well and thank you for listening.
Well, I feel like an old hobo. I'm sad, lonesome and blue. I was fair as a summer day. Now the summer days are through. You pass through places and places pass through. But you carry on with on the soles of your traveling shoes. Well, I love you so dearly. I love you so clearly. I wake you up in the morning so early just to tell you I got